Thank you, Alexei, for the introduction, and I would like also to join all of the speakers for thanking the organizer for the great conference. I'm going to tell you about physics with a single cavity, and the many body are many atoms inside of this cavity, so I connect with the talk of Cristiano Ciuti, who already showed how many interesting physics with a single mode cavity you can find. Let me short motivate this work. It's one among several motivation you have been hearing. I am aiming at discussing the creation of mesoscopic quantum structures, which are stable against noise, and they are thus robust. This may help us in understanding the interplay of quantum noise and nonlinearity in the emergence of quantum coherence and in its disappearance when you scale up the system, and also for photonic quantum simulators. I will then, in particular, discuss what type of photonic simulators I have in mind. This is a very short outline of a talk. I will first talk about spontaneous pattern formation in optical resonators. I will then, in particular, focus on long-range interaction physics in many-body cavity QED, considering ultra-cold atoms. Then I will add frustration, and then check how this long-range physics behave in presence of competing length scales. This is, say, a sketch of the system. This is a single-mode cavity. You see atoms inside. The cavity is lossy. The atom dissipate by spontaneous emission, and they are driven by the site. Now I'm interested in the coupling between the motion of the atoms and the resonator. It's an optomechanical problem. If I write the Hamiltonian for this system, this can be cast in this way. How can it be cast in this way? The atoms are driven far off resonance, so we were today in a lunch discussion about Rayleigh scattering. This is a situation in which the internal degrees of freedom of the atoms are irrelevant to the dynamics. The atom behave like they were classical dipoles, so the light that they emit at a very well-defined phase with respect to the incident laser. On the other hand, the atom move, and this motion is important, and it give us that the atoms behave like a dynamical refractive index. If I look at the Hamiltonian, I see here the kinetic energy. The cavity field has an offset with respect to the driving laser, but also an offset due to the position of the atoms within the cavity mode. That is a cosinus of kx spatial mode, is a standing wave cavity. This is the effect, the way to see microscopically that the atoms are a refractive index. On the other hand, this is also potential for the atom, whose depth is a quantum variable. It is the number of photon inside of the resonator. Then I will discuss several situation prevailing, the case in which the atoms are driven by the site. When they are driven by the site, they scatter laser photon into the cavity mode, and this give rise to an effective coupling of this sort, where you have a displacement of the cavity field. This is the cavity field that you see here, A dagger plus A, the annihilation and creation operator of a cavity photon, times the sum of the scattering amplitudes of the atom, which depend on their position between the standing wave. This tells you that you can pump more or less efficiently the cavity, depending on how the atoms are distributed within this mode. This is already what tells you how quantum structures can emerge. Since this is a talk that is majorly focused on mechanical effects of light, I will try to give in a nutshell how can we imagine that the scattering emerge and give rise to patterns. I give it here very simply. There is a laser photon which is incident of an atom, and the atom scatters by spontaneous emission a photon at frequency omega. If you tailor the absorption process in such a way that the frequency of the emitted photon is larger than the frequency of the absorbed photon, then you can manage to transfer energy, and in particular mechanical energy, from the atoms into the mode of the electromagnetic field. This actually can lead to a dynamical steady state of the system. Now, here there should be an error, which is not visible, but let's say we put now a resonator about this atom. Now there is a strong coupling of this atom with the mode of this cavity. And now what will happen? It will happen that the atom will scatter. I think I got fat. My jacket is too tight. I'm sorry. So the atom will scatter photon into the cavity mode. And this photon will be, after some round trip, be emitted by the cavity mirror. So it's coherent scattering, what is going on. It is a Rayleigh scattering of a photon into the cavity mode. But there is an effective cooling that you can observe as long as you can shape the emission process so that the emitted photon by the resonator has a frequency which is larger than the incident photon of the laser. Now, this photon has also a well-defined amplitude, which depends on its position within the standing wave mode. So if you have two atoms, then this different amplitude can give rise to different fields inside of the resonator depending on where these atoms are. So in principle, you can make this field larger or smaller depending on how you place the atoms within the resonator. So in this way, you can also see that the resonator also mediates an effective interaction because the photons that are pumped into the resonator have a number which depends on where the atoms are, trap the atom themselves. So in a way, they mediate an interaction between the atoms. So now this is not a closed system, it is an open system. Whether this interaction will emerge will depend on how strong you drive with respect to losses. And in particular, if you drive it sufficiently strong, this cavity-mediated interaction will emerge. And in one dimension, one can check that this type of long-range mediated interaction by the photons is belonging to a class of open problems in statistical mechanics. These open problems are the statistical mechanics of gravitational clusters and astrophysical plasmas, or also new neutral plasmas. And they are characterized by a class of long-range potential with scale as 1 over r to the a. R is the interparticle distance. A is the exponent, which is smaller than the dimension of the problem. So if you look at gravitation or Coulomb interaction at dimension larger than 1, then you can see that they belong to this class. What are the consequences of having such a potential? First of all, you can check that the energy is non-additive. So if you make partitions of your system for a sufficiently large number of particles, then you can see that the energy of the system cannot be, at any rate, approximated by the sum of the energy of the partition, because the interaction between the two boxes scales like the size of the system. So this has a big consequence. The ensembles are not equivalent. If you make a calculation in a macrocanonical ensemble, you can find that you have negative specific heat, which is at first glance a paradox, but you understand it immediately as soon as you check that your energy is non-additive. And then there are also important dynamical effects. And in particular, you see pre-thermalization. And this pre-thermalization takes place over time scales, which diverge as you increase the size of a system. So the type of states that are observed are in the literature known as quasi-stationary states. And this is a plot of the magnetization as a function of the time. For a specific toy model for the physics of the long-range interaction. And you see that before the system reaches the Boltzmann-Gibbs distribution, then it stays in an intermediate state for a long time, and this long time doesn't scale linearly with the size. This is a curve for 10 to the 3, 2,000, 5 times 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4, and 2 times 10 to the 4. Atoms. And in particular, if you look at the scaling of this time scale of this lifetime in this intermediate state, then this is this increases with n of to the 1 plus b, and b is of the order of 0.7. Okay, so now I will search for this physics in this system. In atoms inside of a resonator, which is driven by the side, and the interaction is interaction which is mediated by the cavity field. And first of all, I would like to give a few slides on the previous history. I select some. I think one can trace back a lot of this research to the seminal experiment by Vladan Vuletic in Stanford, in which he looked at an ensemble of cesium atoms that he trapped inside of a standing wave resonator. And then he observed, by pumping the atom with a sufficiently high strength, the emission in outside of the cavity was suppressed, and emission into the resonator was enhanced, and the light that was emitted was phase-locked and was present in two specific phases, which were different by a phase pi corresponding, which could be drawn back to the formation of two types of patterns, where the atoms either confine at the odd sides of the standing wave or at the even sides of the standing wave. So these are like the Bragg gratings that maximize, in that configuration, the emission of the photon into the resonator, and they are actually two. And the difference among them is exactly a wavelength, and the wavelength gives you then a phase difference equal to pi. Sorry, half a wavelength, and half a wavelength gives you a difference equal to pi. Now, you can associate to this process an order parameter. And this order parameter is the field inside of the resonator that you can draw back, it's all really scattering, to the sum of the cosinus of the position of the atom within the resonator. Indeed, the scattered field is proportional to this parameter. And Bodomokos and Rich actually were the first who numerically demonstrated this behavior. What you see here is the onset of self-organization. Here are the atoms' trajectories as a function of time, and you see that the atoms are at distances corresponding either to these even or odd patterns, and jumps, of course, there are this is a lossy system, and they are simultaneous jumps, so there is, it's like the pattern becomes unstable, it becomes altogether unstable. These are the trajectory of eight atoms inside of the resonator.
Individual of those eight.
So let's say. These are the trajectory of eight atoms which are simultaneously trapped inside of the resonator, and they are plotted here as a function of time. So there is this long-range interaction going on, and this is what. So if you look at these distances, this corresponds to one of these possible patterns you see here. And I forgot to repeat the question, I will try to remember. So now if one looks at the simplified mean field, one can see that this is a phenomenon with threshold, and the threshold you can understand that it emerges because it is a lossy system. If you practically pump it too weakly, there is going not to be sufficient time for a second atom to rescatter the photon that has been scattered by the first. And the fact that this fact is visible, if you look at this order parameter as a function of the pump strength, in this plot that comes from this paper, it is at zero, practically here. It has different values, but it's practically equal to zero where the atoms are uniformly distributed. And then there is a moment in which you see this bifurcation to two possible values that one can associate to the formation of an odd or of an even pattern. So now we went back to this problem. In particular, we were motivated by a question by the most recent works by Tillmann Essinger. Tillmann Essinger trapped ultra-cold atoms into the resonator and observed also this self-organization. And one of the questions was, what is quantum in this problem and what is a thermal effect? So we went back to the thermal problem and we looked at the cooling inside of these resonators with the purpose to check several quantities and see how far they are similar to the one of the quantum problem. We were interested in the phase transition and in particular at this point where the bifurcation occurs. And for this reason, we were obliged to treat the cavity field as a quantum variable since at this point there are large fluctuations. But we could assume that there is a time-scale separation between the cavity field and the external motion, which led us to introduce some sort of perturbation theory. We treated the atoms semi-classically, and in lowest order this perturbation theory, we assumed that the field practically follows adiabatically the atoms, and then we took the non-adiabatic corrections. This leads to a Fokker-Planck equation for the distribution of the n atoms within the resonator, which can be cast in this form. What you see from on this side is this Hamiltonian dynamics, which are the Poisson brackets. And on the other side, you see the dissipation and diffusion, and I'll discuss them. The Hamiltonian, which one obtains at zero order in this retardation, has an effective potential, and this effective potential scales with theta square. So you see it has very long range interaction. And it is in many respects analogous to what is called the Hamiltonian mean field model in the physics of long range interaction. And this Hamiltonian mean field model contains all the basic features that one would like to see of a long range interactive system like a gravitational cluster. But not only the Hamiltonian dynamics establish correlation, noise also does. And it does it because if you think about it, whenever a photon is lost by the resonator, there is a quench of the potential. And the quench of the potential is a quench of the potential of all the atoms. And there is a retardation in the readjustment of the atom to the new potential, which leads to a global effect. Now, what you see here is that you have a damping and a diffusion, but they both have off-diagonal element, which depends on the position of all the other atoms at the other point of this standing wave potential. So can we study this transition and characterize it? And we can do it if we have, for instance, a stationary state which is thermal. But there is a solution of this Fokker-Planck equation, which is a thermal state. It is shown here. It is practically the exponential of minus beta, the Hamiltonian with a long-range interaction, whereby beta now is a parameter to which you would associate a temperature, but which is determined by the detuning between the cavity and the laser and by the line width of the resonator. So this is actually a behavior that you find it either that you have one atom or n atoms, and this thermalization is this final temperature that you observe is not a many body effect. But there are correlations in the problems, and the correlation you see then because this Hamiltonian contains this parameter theta square, which is the sum of the cosinus square. So first of all, let us analyze the transition to order. The transition to order can be then studied. One can write the free energy of the per particle by making a saddle point approximation and see that this can be cast in the form of a lambda potential. It is a quartic potential, you see, and the quadratic term can change sign depending on the value of the pump strength with respect to a threshold value, which naturally comes out from this theory. One can then also make a phase diagram, and in this phase diagram, then you see that you will have in the white region no order, and in the shaded region, depending on how dark it becomes, more and more order arriving to the perfect order in one of the two patterns. And by increasing the laser power, then you go along this line and you see that the magnetization, which you can associate to this parameter theta, augments. On the other side, if you go along this line, the temperature is always, which is constant as a function of the laser power, has a minimum at a certain value, which is equal to the detuning equal to the line width of the resonator, and then it increases again. And for people who are familiar with Doppler cooling, this is no wonder. It's actually a very unexpected result. So we studied the dynamics. We said, okay, we have a new Nimbort distribution at a hot temperature, and then we drive the system below threshold, which means that we take a value of n bar, which is in the white region at, say, delta C equal to minus 1. And now we see what happens, and we see that there is an exponential damping. All the atoms practically are independently cooled, and they're cooled to the temperature that we fix at the beginning by choosing the laser. And we have a Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution, and everything is follows according to our typical expectation for a single atom physics. And what you see here is that the times is in unit of milliseconds. Milliseconds have been here chosen according to a certain cavity line width, which is the cavity line width of the experiment at DTH. But let me say that at a time scale of the order of 10 to the 3 cavity lifetime, the system has more or less reached its steady state. Now we make a quench, so we take the steady state, and then we ramp suddenly the laser power to a value well inside this dark region. And what you see here are trajectories for each realization. For this parameter theta, the system decides immediately whether to go left on to the odd or an even pattern, but it remains for a very long time, so say till 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6, in an intermediate state, which can be to good extent be associated with the stationary state, before it arrives to the state that we expect, to the value theta that we expect from the solution of our Fokker-Planck equation. There is a lifetime of the order to 10 of the 10 to the 6 to 10 to the 7 cavity lifetimes. Now, if we check how the distribution is, we see that already, so after this point, still at this point, the momentum distribution is non-thermal. And one can then ask, you know, how far these analogies with quasi-stationary state can be drawn, and we looked at a simulation by just taking the Hamiltonian dynamics, and so that, so if you take the full dynamics with the noise, the parameter theta reaches this stationary state determined by the noise, otherwise the Hamiltonian dynamics will give you another asymptotic behavior. But on the other hand, if you look at the kurtosis, that gives you an information of the non-Gaussianity of your state of, you know, how far it is non-thermal, your momentum distribution, then you see that the Hamiltonian dynamics lead the system on a faster time scale towards the thermalized state, while the noise traps the system into this non-thermal metastable distribution. So now I will discuss what happens if I take ultra-cold atoms and I add another interaction, which is not a long-range interaction, but say the short-range interaction like S-wave scattering. And at first I remind you of a very nice experiment at ETH in the group of Tillmann-Esslinger, in which the atoms are driven by the side, they form a Bose-Einstein condensate, and as a function of the strength of the drive, then they see the formation of in two dimension of checkerboard pattern, so the even and odd pattern are now checkerboard if you consider it in two dimension, and you see that there is the same type of bifurcation we were discussing before, with a corresponding phase locking of the system with to one of the two phases, but the in this case purely dispersive. In this setup, they could show that they could reconstruct this phase diagram. Actually, there is a very nice phase diagram coming up soon in the archives, but I'm now talking about the Dickey phase transition, and for the Dickey phase transition, they look at the strength of the pump lattice and the tuning between the laser and the cavity, and they could see that they had a super solid regime here inside, where there was a superfluid regime here outside, where the atoms were still forming a four Bose-Einstein condensate. And after a line of this transition, the system was building up a super solid, and this super solid is then characterized by a superfluid phase, but also diagonal long range order. So this was feasible, among other, by looking at brass scattering. So now, if you add the short range interaction, what happens? And now, in this case, if we look at our model, it is like taking our Hamiltonian with the long-range potential plus the S-wave scattering. But you have to consider that if you wanted to study the atoms in this optical lattice, now the optical lattice in which they are trapped has been scattered by the atom themselves. So if you want to look at, for instance, the Bose-Abelard model and determine the coefficient, your Wannier function will depend on the potential, and the potential depends on the density. So it's actually a nonlinear problem. This nonlinearity leads to a series of features that I highlight in the next transparency. First, let me show you the Bose-Abelard model, where we have here the tunneling, the S-wave scattering, and the corresponding term to this theta square term that now is written with the Wannier decomposition. So one of the points is the fact that you may observe inside of the super solid phase, the transition to an incompressible phase, but gaps open. And these gaps between the lobes are due to the fact that the long range interaction actually tend to put the atom modulus the wavelength everywhere. So if they're all in the same well, or they are each at a different well, the long range potential is going to have the same value. But the S-ray scattering penalizes configuration in which you can put several atoms inside. So the long-range potential, in some respect, acts like an attractive interaction and give rise, for central chemical potential, to phases which remain super solid even when the pump is practically so large that tunneling can be neglected. So now let us say that the optical lattice that we take and trap the atom is now put outside. It's not the optical lattice that the atom creates by scattering. Now we have a laser, and this laser drives the atoms and confines them in the lowest band of an optical lattice. But now the atom also interacts with the optical lattice of the cavity. And we assume that they have actually the same, the commensurate wavelength, so that you can set. So here there is a, So that the wavelength of the cavity, determining practically the spacing of the even and odd pattern, is practically equal to the, this is an error, so let me write it this way. So the wavelength of the cavity is equal to the wavelength of the optical lattice, so that the distance between the atoms between the optical lattice is equal to half the wavelength. So in this situation, you wouldn't have any scattering. But if you drive the system sufficiently large, then you observe, again, the formation of this even and odd pattern. And if I plot them inside of this phase diagram, which I show here, the tunneling and the chemical potential, then I see that there are Mott insulator phases, but in which the practically it's a Mott insulator of these external optical lattices. But then at certain value of the chemical potential, a checkerboard pattern forms. So this Mott insulator practically arises in more or less in the same region where before we were observing the gaps. And there is actually a direct transition between this Mott insulator in which the atoms occupy each site of the optical lattice to the Mott insulator in which the atom occupy every two sites, thus making, giving rise to one of these even or odd patterns which maximizes the scattering. Now, one can talk about four possible phases. There is a Mott insulator. There is a Mott insulator with a checkerboard distribution. There is a superfluid, where actually practically there is no field inside of the resonator, and a supersolid, where the field inside of the resonator is different from zero. And this is visible here. This line practically tells you that in this phase of the atoms, the number of photons inside of the resonator is maximized. Now I choose the optical lattice to be incommensurate with the cavity, so I add a small discommensuration. So this is lambda equal to lambda zero without this over two plus epsilon. So there is a mismatching. And if I drive the atom from the side, actually I shouldn't observe any back scattering if I look at the atom like fixed point particle. And if we look at this diagram, again, in this situation of disorder, the system has the tendency still to form structures which are not going to be periodic because Hamiltonian is now aperiodic, but they still maximize the number of photons inside of the resonator. And instead of four phases, we see now eight phases. And the eight phases are Mott insulator and superfluid, which are here and here outside. And Mott insulator and superfluid means simply that there is no field inside of the resonator. And practically, we just tune our phase diagram by changing the depth of the optical lattice potential. But then, for certain chemical potential and certain tunneling, we observe the formation of Bose glass or supersolid phases, where the number of photons inside of the resonator is very large. Now, what type of phases are they? If we look at the diagrams here outside, there is an external field, but at the end, one can associate to this superfluid phase the formation of a superfluid everywhere. And these stripes are due to the fact that the system is driven from the side, from a standing wave. Inside of the region where the number of photons is maximum, on the other hand, there are sort of checkerboard pattern, and they are checkerboard in the sense that there are clusters where the atoms practically form one of these Mott insulator with checkerboard order, and outside they form a superfluid. So there are islands of this Mott insulator forming even an odd or odd pattern surrounded by superfluid region. And outside, one can find percolation, so one can find that there is a tunnel in along one direction, so that one can say that this distribution still has a form of the checkerboard, but the density distribution within the lattice becomes of a different type of symmetry. Now, what does it mean, all of this? Well, if you set the chemical potential, you impose different densities. And if you impose different densities and you penalize the fact that two atoms can be at the same site, then the system will try to maximize the number of photons inside of the resonator, but will also try to minimize the density within the number of atoms per each site. So it means that it will try to form, given the density, every possible cluster that maximizes the number of photons inside of the resonator. Now, I will take the last few minutes in order to discuss what happens if I increase the range of the competing interaction. And instead of taking it short range, I will take it long range. So let me draw here a short-range interaction and ramp it up to a long-range type of interaction, like you could have it with ions interacting with the Coulomb interaction. So here I discussed how incommensurate length between an external optical lattice and the cavity optical lattice can lead to some type of quasi-order structure which maximizes the cavity field. And here I will now make reference to a situation in which inside of the cavity there are ions forming a chain. And then I will ask what happens if the typical distance between the ions in the chain is incommensurate with respect to the cavity optical lattice. So what I'm going to first argue is that this is actually a system for simulating static friction, and it has been analyzed recently experimentally by a very nice experiment of Vladan Vuletic at MIT. And the nice feature of this system that it is reproduces and simulates the so-called Franken-Kontorovan model, which contains in itself all the basic features of friction in one dimension. So if you have an elastic lattice, which could be the one constituted by an ion chain, and you superpose to this a substrate with a certain wavelengths, and you have a mismatching between the distance between the ions of the lattice and the wavelength of the substrate, then you can observe that if the depth of this lattice is below a certain critical value, then you can induce motion with practically a zero force. So it's practically a frictional phase because it takes you a vanishing force for putting the lattice into motion. But if this depth is above this critical value, then you need a finite force in order to practically move the ions. And this is called emergence of the static friction in the sense of any stick strip behavior that you observe statically between two surfaces. Now, the difference between the static friction here is the fact that the lattice now is a dynamical lattice. It is a lattice of an optical cavity which is pumped, and it is described by this term that I was arguing before is a dynamical, was giving rise to this dynamical refractive medium. So it is given by a parameter times the number of photons times the sum of the cosine square of the ions within the resonator. So to make a long story short, I show here the phase diagram where the slidings, the frictionless, and the pinned phase are plotted as a function of the strength of this external pump and of the cooperativity, which was discussed in several talks before, and is practically how big is this parameter U0 scaling this nonlinearity, this nonlinear coupling with the resonator. And then you see here that the sliding and pinned phase are, which are usually separated by a continuous transition, are now separated by, for sufficiently large cooperativity, by an hysteretical region, where the transition becomes from second order, if it were in a finite system, to first order. If we look at where the atoms are localized, so this is actually inside of the pin phase, so this is the cosine square of each ion, then you see that we took into account the external trap. There are a number of kinks, so displacement of the ion with respect to the external optical lattice only in the center, while the system tends to be deep in the pin phase, in the commensurate phase outside at the border. And if you look at the scattering processes that lead to a system to a steady state, then we see that the energy of the chain is a maximum at the transition point, here as a function of the external pump, and at this two region around, there is a maximal entanglement between the kink, that is in this case being cooled maximally by the choice of the parameter, and the cavity field. And this is actually a very good setting for making quantum reservoir engineering of the kinks and using dissipation in order to manipulate them. Let me summarize shortly what are the long-range features in this case. First of all, the appearance of p-stability, the fact that the substrate cools the ions, it's a thermal reservoir, and the fact that it also gives rise to these correlations among the kinks. I will give now a short outlook. I showed phase diagrams which manifest how the interplay between a short and long range mechanism give rise to exotic phases. I discussed quenches, but one important point is the fact that so far I looked at sudden quenches, and the quenches that are performed in the experiment are instead slow quenches. One would be tempted to use the Kibble-Zurek paradigm, but one has to be careful in this case because the Kibble-Zurek paradigm is used to, uses the equilibrium thermodynamics in order to understand what happens when you quench across criticality, and makes reference to the formation of spatial domain that increases in size as a power law. On the other hand, if you have a long-range direction, these domains are highly penalized. It is practically the interaction energy between these domains is so large that they may not appear. And this is actually also a property that you see in this long-range interacting situation. And another point is the first-order phase transition, where you have coexistence of phases. Coexistence of phases is never a spatial coexistence. It's only in time. So one has to reconsider several paradigma. And in general, let me close by saying that it's an exciting field for studying the physics of long-range interaction and several other phenomena. I would like to thank many people with whom I have discussed and worked, and some of the works have not been shown here. And in particular, I would like to thank Stefan Schutz, who's a PhD student who worked on the first part of this talk, and Katarina Royan, who is also presenting a poster here, and Thomas Fogarty, who's a postdoc who made the major work on the Frank Kontorova, and I thank you for your attention.
Questions?
Yeah. So I may have missed some things while you were explaining the first part of your talk. So my question relates to the statement that there's an effective temperature and the results you presented. Is this for the unorganized phase?
It is for both.
For both. And so what is different on both sides?
If you look at the tuning, so in this phase diagram, so once you fix the tuning, then the steady state temperature is going to be the same. What changes the phase is the strength of the laser power which the atom from this side, which is this parameter n bar that enters in this equation.
So.
But the threshold of this laser power is determined by the detuning and by the cavity line width. The point is the fact that the temperature alone, you can practically so identify it by means of this solution of the Fokker-Planck equation.
Is this the temperature of the combined system, or is this only the atomic temperature?
It is only the atomic temperature, in the sense that we obtain it after eliminating the cavity field. In the first order, in this perturbative treatment, which we treat the retardation as a small correction.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that... Sorry. Yeah. I'm surprised it's the same expression on both sides.
Yes, we were surprised too.
Is this consistent with the findings from Misha's group? There's a Della
Torre paper. Yes, it is consistent in the sense that, if I'm correct, in your paper the temperature is not a function of the laser power. So we checked this photon field expression that you give, and if one substitutes the parameter, it takes this form.
Okay.
And actually, this is a good point. The next point would be to analyze more in detail the treatment in the paper you wrote with Michel Lukin, wrote with Emanuele Della Torre. Since in that manuscript, you make an immediate assumption. You say, okay, here there's Z2 type of symmetry, so I immediately quantize the system, and I say I associate a spin to the fact that I have the parameter theta equal to 1 or to minus 1. So now we said, okay, let us look microscopically, because we have continuous variables, how we can demonstrate that we arrive to this type of description. And indeed, I would say that in many respects, it confirms all the assumption on the basis of your paper. On the other hand, there are several open points related to the dynamics that we have still to understand, and some of them can be brought back to this quasi-stationary state.
So you raised this question, what is quantum in this, and can you put in a nutshell what is quantum in there? Because I mean, can one say if half a photon makes a difference, it's quantum? Or in the end, you quantize the.
Well, I'm looking for something, but so what is quantum? Referred to at the beginning is whether the Dickey phase transition is a quantum phase transition, in the sense whether it is practically coming from the interplay of quantum fluctuations, and what I would say is that it is not. So the transition from a superfluid to a supersolid is such that it has all the same shares all the property of the thermal transition. The only thing that the cavity doesn't do is not to, in this dispersive regime, is it doesn't destroy superfluidity. So the superfluidity remains, but on top it creates order. And the quantum phase transition emerges when you go deep to larger pump strengths, and then you observe the onset of incompressible phases, like the Mott insulator phases. That is quantum, and that according to this way of formulating the problem. But actually, we also checked all the signal at the cavity output for our problem. We compared them with the G2 function and with the intensity that is measured, with the G1 function that is measured, that has been measured in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in American, I think it's NAS, that has been published 2 years ago by the group of Tillmann Essinger, and we found practically qualitative agreement in all features, except for the width of certain resonances that we can also be brought back to the scattering processing occurring. But the main features that you can associate to the phase transition are the same.
Could you please give us some more details about the super solid phase? Is the crystalline order commensurable or incommensurable? You talk about these frustration effects, but you didn't mention about the properties of the super solid, right? Yeah.
So this is actually something we are. You're not referring to this phase diagram, but you are referring to this phase diagram. Yeah.
Both.
For instance, this one that in which I introduce an incommensurate optical lattice. So yes. So we call it super solid. And if we look at the structure form factor, it is not. It is zero. So there is no periodic order. There is aperiodic, so it's not zero. It's different from zero, but it doesn't have the features to which I could associate the formation of long-range order inside of the system. But there is quasi-crystalline order, in the sense that the clusters are aperiodic. And if you look, for instance, at here I plot it very, I reported it very fast. If you look at in one dimension at the formation of these clusters, so what I show here are the occupation of each lattice site. When it is one, there is one atom. When it is zero, there are zero atoms. And I have chose here that the wavelength of the resonator is a bit mismatched with respect to the optical lattice wavelength. So if they would be mismatched, there would be, in this phase, one atom, zero, one atom, zero, one atom, zero, which would be, say, an even pattern. But now there is a mismatch. So at a certain point, if I keep on ordering the atom in this way, the next atom will start to, after a certain wavelength, a certain distance, the next atom will start to emit out of phase. And then this cluster of atoms will emit out of phase with respect to the first. So this is specific for 1D, but I think it is illustrative for the case that we are discussing. What you see is that the atoms start to order, and when there start to be the mismatching, there are fluctuations. It's like a small superfluid island, so that they reorganize to be again in phase with the previous cluster. So I call it super solid, but I wouldn't say that we have octagonal long range order.
Yeah, I have a question on the friction part. When you say that you have an optical, you have a lattice potential and can be dynamical in some sense. What is the fate of that sliding transition when you are in the quantum, deep quantum regime of the lattice? I didn't catch the.
So you say here?
Yeah. So this is a pump strength. This
is a pump strength, and this is the cooperativity. It can be positive and negative, and the fact that it's positive and negative is related to the fact that you can associate an effective potential, and then you see that. This effective potential have maxima or minima at the point where the ions are more or less.
But the transition is still there even when the photon is quantum in some sense. The sliding transition.
Even in the full quantum mechanical regime, yes.
And the critical value is always zero in some sense. Yeah. Oh.
So your question is whether if I have a large fluctuation in the photon number, I can use this description. Okay, the answer in this case is no. It's a semi-classical case. And in fact, we chose the parameter in such a way that these lines occur for a sufficiently large number. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's thank Giovanna again.